From the Atlantic to the Pacific, across the islands of the Caribbean, from mountain crest to mountain crest, from canyons to the clouds, and into the cosmos, we're pumping wattage high and low, plus streaming worldwide on the internet and keeping you company tonight. It's the place to relax and hang out. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We have assembled the finest team of reporters and the most intriguing guests, and that's why we are your favorite hub in a wild world. So keep it tuned right here. Well, this coming week is an exciting one because at long last, the new book will be hitting the bookshelves. The high-quality publication called Only in Asheville, an Eclectic History. And here is a description of the book. A unique blend of visionaries, risk-takers, and creative souls lends energy to Asheville's historic streets. Today, bohemian street performers, funky shops, exquisite art galleries, restaurants, craft breweries blend in among some of the most revered vintage architecture in the country. Discover quirky figures like a nun named Sister Bad Habit, who entertains passengers on the Lazoom bus, the man in white living statue, and Asheville's village witch. Be inspired by innovative dreamers such as Julian Price, who invested millions in the once desolate downtown Asheville, giving money to an eclectic mix of restaurateurs and shop owners. Author Marla Milling traces the people and places that make her hometown a truly unique city. And let me tell you all about Marla Hardy Milling. She is a full-time writer in Asheville and a member of the American Society of Journalists and Authors. More than 750 of her articles and essays have appeared in many publications, including Blue Ridge Country, where she is a contributing editor, Luxury Living, Parenting, Red Book, R State, WNC, American Style, Niche, and others. She spent 10 years as a news producer at WLOS-TV in Asheville and 6 years as a director of communications at Mars Hill College. Her website is marlamilling.com. We also have that linked up for you at speakingofstrange.com. Marla Hardy Milling, welcome to Speaking of Strange.
Thank you so much, Joshua. I am really excited about this book, and I'm even more excited for your listeners to know that you are a big part of this book because I interviewed you, obviously, you being someone who knows a lot about strange and weird, about your take on Asheville. So there are some great quotes in the book from you.
Well, thank you so much. I am truly honored to be featured there in Chapter 1 called, fittingly enough, Strange Alignment. And as a matter of fact, if listeners go to your website, they can read that first chapter for free. It's also available on the Amazon.com page. And now, being a native of Asheville, Marla, tell us about your upbringing.
Gosh, that made me stop cold there for a minute. Obviously, I love Asheville and the Blue Ridge Mountains. I've never wanted to live anywhere else but here. There's a certain draw here, and I think people will find this through my book, whether it was the wealthy like George Vanderbilt who came here and built his magnificent Biltmore estate, or artists or eclectic or New Age people. There's something about these mountains that really pull you and tug at you to stay or to stay connected. So my upbringing to current day is that I feel deeply connected to this area in a way that I can't really explain. But there is a deep love from me for Asheville.
Now, what area of the region did you grow up in mainly? Where did you, form your roots?
I grew up in South Asheville in the Skyland area, mm-hmm. and went to T.C. Robertson High School. And then I stayed in Asheville and went to the University of North Carolina at Asheville. And from there, I went to work at WLOS-TV, which, as you know, beside the Grove Park Inn, had its own legacy of weirdness with ghost tales. And I think working at very odd hours in that building just lended itself to an awareness that things weren't always as they seem in Asheville. Of course, the Great Park Inn has ghost tales of its own. And I continue to live in North Asheville today.
You know, I'll just say as a side note, of course, we have investigator Shelley Wright of Wright's Coin Shop in the studio. Shelley, you also went to T.C. Robertson, didn't you?
I did.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's great.
So we obviously have to give a shout-out to T.C. Robertson. They do a very fine job of shaping brilliant minds. So congratulations to both of you.
Go Rams!
So now, Marla, there have been many great books published about Asheville and its history and its culture over the years. What made you decide to write this new book, Only in Asheville, and what was the approach that you decided to take?
Well, in recent years, Asheville has gotten some amazing publicity, and it seems to be on the top 10 list on everything from food to music to scenery to craft beer. Every other day I'm reading something in the New York Times or newspapers or blogs across the country. But late last summer, something really caught my eye, and it was Travel and Leisure magazine named Asheville the quirkiest place in America. And I thought, you know, we have bumper stickers around town that say, keep Asheville weird. We're now known as the quirkiest place in America. But what does that mean? Those are really vague terms, weird, quirky. And at that moment, I thought, I want to tell this story or define for people what makes Asheville such a special place in a strange, eclectic, quirky way. So it goes through some of the more traditional history that people know about this place with Vanderbilt and Grove and some of those stories. But it also goes into today's history with people like Sister Bad Habit and the Man in White and Asheville Village, which people that are contributing to this feeling of this place being completely different than any other that you might go to. So that was my strategy, was to help define for people what it is that makes Asheville so unique.
What a grand goal, because, yes, there is so much there to dig into. And, you know, when it comes to, as you are saying, this idea that we were once just a rough pioneer town, and then all of a sudden, you know, this almost unimaginable wealth came in with the Vanderbilts, which created this very, you know, upper class kind of society. And then over the years, we have seen how that has always created this contrast between, you know, the rugged mountain living next to people who have millions, if not billions of dollars. And now we have all these other little layers in between of people who, as you put, are from eclectic backgrounds. What was that transition like? I mean, how do we go from pioneers to super wealthy to now all of this kind of creativity and arts and entertainment and microbrews? I mean, how did that all fall into place in this small, sort of sleepy mountain town?
I think it all goes back to that first chapter, the one that people can read for free, about the strange alignment that you talk about and that we feel. There's something otherworldly in this place, whether it's the quartz in the mountains, whether it's the geological tie that you make to the Bermuda Triangle, which I'd never heard before, linking Asheville to the tip of the Bermuda Triangle. There's something really pulling here. So you've got Vanderbilt coming in. You've got pioneers who are living here, living that hard scrabble life, but they loved it. There was a lot of music and a lot of energy and craftspeople. And then you've got the wealthy coming in, and it's a wealthy playground, and you've got entrepreneurs coming in. But it still comes back to that root of there's something in these mountains that is strangely drawing, and there's also a very strange ability in Asheville for everyone to seemingly coexist. It amazes me how you can go downtown, and whether it is the wealthy person next to you or the homeless street person, everyone just seems to naturally coexist in Nashville.
Yeah, you know, that's a very important point, because you're right. I mean, you have people who on paper seem so different from each other, and yet, yes, we have a very peaceful coexistence here for the most part, especially compared to other places in the United States. And I love the fact that, you know, you're rooting all of it into the idea that there is something truly special about this spot on planet Earth. And just to give listeners a bit more insight, one thing that they'll find when they read that first chapter of the book, Strange Alignment, is that, you know, I pointed out during our interview that if you take Asheville and you draw a line east, you find a lot of interesting things that all are sort of on the same plane. First off, we make it to Brown Mountain, where we have the Brown Mountain Lights, one of the great mysteries of the world. You continue drawing that line, you hit the Devil's Tramping Ground, which is this big barren circle, and nobody can explain why nothing will grow there. And you keep drawing that line, and you finally hit the coast of North Carolina, where so many ships have sunk. They call it the Graveyard of the Atlantic. And then off the coast, we have Roanoke Island, where the very first English colony was established, or at least they tried to, and then they all disappeared. It's now known as the Lost Colony. And you continue drawing that line out, and sure enough, you hit the island of Bermuda, one of the points of the Bermuda Triangle. So certainly there is something here that almost takes on a spiritual tone. And have you found, when you interview all these different people from different backgrounds, that they all felt strangely attracted here? Does that always come up in your conversations with people?
It often comes up, not with everybody, but Byron Ballard, who is known as Asheville's Village Witch, said something equally important, I think, that the people reason feel pulled to come here are people who will be very connected here. They're very invested in. I think that's why you have a lot of people in the organic foods and back to the earth and sustainable. They feel very deeply connected to the land. And she said in the book, in one of her quotes, that if someone comes here and they don't feel that connection, the Asheville will spit them out, which feels like that kind of a strange, weird pull, that either you come and you're drawn and you become deeply rooted and connected, or you're spit back out.
All right, let's hold it right there for our break, a perfect point to pause. When we come back, we'll talk more about the Asheville Village Witch and this weird connection. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange. Do you think you can tell? So, folks, you're actually hearing Steve Martin playing the banjo there in the song When You Get to Asheville. Welcome back to Speaking of Strange. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren. Tonight's program is presented to you by Wright's Coin Shop. And you may and you should call Wright's Coin Shop at 828-298-5402. That's 828-298-5402. Asheville, North Carolina is our big topic this hour because we are talking with Marla Hardy Milling, and she is the author of the new book, Only in Asheville, An Eclectic History. And it comes out next week, doesn't it, Marla?
It does. The History Press, which was my publisher, plans to release it Monday. So I'm very excited about that and look forward to seeing the reaction that people have to this book.
And you also have a big party that you're going to throw to accompany sort of the month of release at the HOP there on Merriman, right?
That's right. The HOP owners, Greg and Ashley Garrison, are featured in the book. And they're a great example of part of, and this doesn't really fall into weird or strange, but it's part of that flowing energy in Asheville of collaboration. I see a lot of businesses come into town. A lot of people think, you know, Asheville's thriving. We can rush into town and make money. But it's the people who get connected and branch out and collaborate with other businesses. They're the ones who succeed here. And the Garrisons at the HOP are masterful in making connections with other people.
All right. And then that event is going to be on what date?
It will be on Thursday, June 18th from 6:30 to 8:30.
Okay, great. And we'll remind everybody about that later this hour as well. You know, and of course, this hour we're going to play Asheville-oriented bumper music. Asheville, understandably, has this great musical tradition. And on the back of the book, you even have a quote by Beck. What did Beck say in that quote?
He was in Asheville last June. I was fortunate enough to get to go to see him. And he, while he was standing up on stage talking to the crowd, he said something that I took note of and I put on my back cover. He said, "There's a good feeling in this town. It's a little bit different." And that really sums up Asheville. It is different. It's a little bit different here.
Oh, it sure is. Okay, so now, as far as I know, I have never met Byron Ballard, and she is referred to as Asheville's Village Witch. Tell us a bit about your experience with her and her perspective on Asheville.
Well, she is also a Wiccan high priestess. She is one of the people who established Mother Grove Goddess Temple in Asheville. And I met her through researching this book. I'm sure, you know, you, Joshua, have written many books. And I'm sure, you know, in the process of doing one thing leads to another like dominoes. So a lot of people were referred to me. I'd talk to one person, and they'd say, "Oh, you need to talk to such and such." And that was the case with Byron Ballard. I had heard her name for years, and she is a well-published author, too. But I had never met her until writing this book, and she's just lovely. And I loved, you know, her take on how you have to be connected here. You may be drawn here. A lot of people come into town because they just want to check it out. Not everyone's going to fit here. And I found the quote in my book during the break that I was talking about that she said. And she refers it to Portland. I think when people come to Asheville, they're constantly making references to other places. It's called the Paris of the South or Santa Fe of the East. In my book, people compared it to San Francisco. They compared it to Brooklyn. It's been compared to Portland. And she said a lot of people think when they come to Asheville that it's going to be, you know, real new age. And she said, all lovely and glowing like Portland. But she says, that's not what the energy is here. The energy here requires you to come into relationship with the land. And if you don't do that or can't do that, Asheville spits you out. That's a part of Asheville we don't talk about much. It's welcoming here because it is a tourist town. So there's a kind of surface welcome to everyone. Sure, come on in. but to actually be part of here requires a kind of quietness of spirit to connect on a deeper level. And I think that goes with, you know, the strange alignment, the oldest mountains in the world, the third oldest river in the world. You either connect to the spirit of the place or you don't.
Well, you know, there is this kind of love-hate relationship in Asheville with the idea of development. And, of course, you mentioned there, just on in the description of the book, the role that Julian Price played. And let's talk a little bit about that and then compare that to some of the worries that people have about Asheville becoming overdeveloped. So what was Asheville like before Julian Price and the resources he had, and what exactly did he do specifically?
Well, when I was growing up, downtown was a center of activity. All the big department stores were down there. Dentists and doctor's offices were down there. Everyone had reasons to go into downtown. And in 1973, the mall pulled all the department stores out. And from that point, downtown began a steady decline. More and more businesses closed their doors. It became a virtual ghost town. And you could go down there. I know when you were growing up and when I was growing up, there wasn't a whole lot to do downtown Asheville. There certainly wasn't an Orangeville to go to and hear live music. There weren't all the multitude of restaurants and the foodie reputation. There were just a lot of boarded up buildings. So when Julian Price, who had lived, who grew up in North Carolina and then had lived on the West Coast, decided he wanted to come back to his roots, he did a driving tour of North Carolina, and he actually put money down on a condo in New Bern. And he came to Asheville, even though he thought he was going to settle in New Bern. And he walked around this desolate downtown with these gorgeous buildings that had basically been preserved because Asheville was paying back its Depression debt and didn't have money for urban renewal. So we have all these, you know, great Art Deco treasures. And he was walking down Walnut Street in between two buildings that were empty and looking out at Beaucatcher Mountain, and he found himself with tears in his eyes, and he thought, where is this coming from? But he felt that pull. He felt that strange draw, and he thought, I need to be here. I can help save this town. Now, this is pivotal to your question about how is the development different today. This is a man who came into downtown when it was virtually forgotten. Nothing was going on. And he put $15 million of his own money. He found, you know, he would check out a restaurant. There was a little cafe in the Asheville Y called Laughing Seed. And he went to them and said, hey, how'd you like a big restaurant? I will loan you $300,000, and you don't even have to pay me back if you fail. And they were like, who is this guy? Nobody does that. But he did things like that to bring Asheville back to life. Now, that's a rare type of developer. I think today, now that Asheville's popular and booming, you have developers trying to cash in on the fame and the popularity. He came in when it wasn't popular. He came in when it was dying, and he put his own money in, and that's significant.
All right, let's hold that point because that's a great one. When we come back from this break, we'll talk more about where Asheville is today. And I definitely want to talk some about all the microbrews and why that Asheville has the reputation of Beer City, USA. I'm Joshua P. Warren talking right now with Marla Hardy Milling about Only in Asheville. You're listening to Speaking of Strange.
You tell the story, I can tell it all, about the mountain border and illegal alcohol. His daddy made the whiskey, son he drove the load, when his engine roared they called the highway Thunder Road. Sometimes into Asheville, sometimes Memphis town, the revenuers chased him but they couldn't run him down. Each time they thought they had him, his engine would explode. he go by like they were standing still on Thunder Road.
And there was thunder, thunder over Thunder Road.
Thunder was his engine and white lightning was his load.
And there was moonshine, moonshine, Christ the devil's curse.
The law they swore they'd get him, but the devil got him first. On the 1st of April, 1954, a federal man sent word he'd better make his run no more. He sent 200 agents for covering the state. Whichever road he tried to take, they'd get him sure his fate. Son, his daddy told him, make this run your last. Your tank is filled with 100 proof. You're all tuned up and gassed. Now don't take any chances. If you can't get through, I'd rather have you back again than pull that Mountain Dew.
And there was thunder, thunder over Thunder Road.
Thunder was his engine and white lightning was his load.
And there was moonshine, moonshine to quench the devil's thirst.
The law they swore they'd get him, but the devil got him first. Roaring out of Harlan, revving up his mill, he shot the gap at Cumberland and screamed by Maynardville. With G-Man on his taillight, roadblocks up ahead, the mountain boy took roads that even angels feared to tread. Blazing right through Knoxville, out on Kingston Pike, then right outside of Bearden, there they made the fatal strike. He left the road at 90, that's all there is to say. The devil got the moonshine and the mountain boy that day.
And there was thunder, thunder over Thunder Road.
Thunder was his engine and white lightning was his load.
And there was moonshine, moonshine, quench the devil's thirst.
The law they never got him, cause the devil got him first.
Yeah, law welcome back to Speaking of Strange, presented by Wright's Coin Shop. You can call Wright's at 828-298-5402. There is also a link for you at speakingofstrange.com. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and if you go to speakingofstrange.com, you'll also find a link to Only in Asheville, an eclectic history. You'll find the Amazon page as well as a link to Marla Milling's website. It's simply enough, marlamilling.com, M-A-R-L-A-M-I-L-L-I-N-G, marlamilling.com, where you can read the first free chapter. It's the one that features yours truly. What a fantastic book this is. I cannot wait to read the whole thing. And before we continue, Marla, of course, that bumper music comes from Thunder Road. We had Robert Mitchum singing the song. A lot of people have seen Asheville in movies all around the world and didn't know that they were seeing Asheville. As a matter of fact, last year I did a speaking engagement in upstate New York at Fort Henry, which was the fort featured in the movie Last of the Mohicans. And when I told people up there that I was from Asheville, where they shot large portions of that movie, a lot of people were surprised. They assumed that that movie had actually been filmed on location in the Adirondacks up around upstate New York. And so I said, nope, that was Western North Carolina that you were looking at. So, the fact that this area, Asheville, has been featured in so many films also has, at very least on an underground level, sort of given it a great, rich reputation. And is that something that you looked at also in your book?
I did briefly. I didn't go too in-depth in it because there was such a wealth of material in Asheville. But I do have a section about movies. You know, the Hunger Games were just filmed in the area, for one. There have been countless movies at the Biltmore Estate. Back
yeah.
when Grace Kelly, filmed The Swan, and Peter Sellers was there for being there, and there's so many. Robin Williams was there filming Patch Adams, pulling these out of the top of my head, but
there's
been so many movies shot in and around Asheville, Western North Carolina, and Biltmore House in particular. And a lot of people don't realize that Charlton Heston, and I have this in the book, Charlton Heston got his start as director of the Asheville Community Theater, and he and his wife Lydia lived in Asheville for a year before his acting career really took off. So it does have that mystique of movie stars and, famous people coming to town. Andy McDowell lived here for quite a few years. I understand she is now living somewhere else, but she had a home in Asheville and different, as you mentioned, I think in the last break, Steve Martin, who was singing the song, lives in nearby Brevard. So there is that mystique of movies and mystery.
Yeah, and for people who are listening in other parts of the world who've never been to Asheville, you know, the Biltmore House is the largest private residence in America, and you can see it in the movie Richie Rich. You mm-hmm. can see it in the movie Hannibal, the sequel to Silence of the Lambs. I used to take little odd jobs and, you know, working on these productions that came into town. And I got to spend some time with Robin Williams when he was doing Patch Adams. And, of course, when they did My Fellow Americans, when James Garner and Jack Lemmon came into town, I got to meet those guys. And they closed down the streets of Asheville and had a parade. And it was just, you know, it's amazing how many people have probably seen Asheville and never even realized it. But getting back to the actual culture of the city today, let's certainly talk about the fact that it's known as Beer City, USA. Why on earth is it so popular with all these brewers?
Well, back in 1994, Oscar Wong decided to come out of retirement and start producing beer. You know, he thought it might be great if Asheville was kind of like a European town and there might be one or two brewers and you come into Asheville and get some fresh beer. And he's astounded that today he has led the pack. He was the first legal brewery since Prohibition in Asheville. And his brewery is Highland Brewing. There are now, I think, 16 breweries in Asheville alone and more in the county. And he finds that unbelievable. So there's definitely a demand for fresh beer here. There are very creative brewers here. I also interviewed Mike Rangel, who owns Asheville Pizza and Brewing, and they were the third brewing company in the area. And I find it interesting, not only will they all experiment with different flavors and come up with these creative beers that maybe only one runs and they'll never be seen again, but they also play off local people. Like there's a Sister Bad Habit Ale. I find that to be truly Asheville, you know, to incorporate the fun things with the beer.
Well, I have heard that some of these brewers say they love Asheville because the water is just perfect for brewing. Have you heard that also?
I have, and I think that was a major reason that New Belgium is building in the River Arts District and why Sierra Nevada came in. When you've got these big players coming in, they all named the great water as a primary reason for wanting to be in Asheville.
Yeah. So now, you know, getting back to the whole idea that Asheville is truly exploding, and you know, I travel a lot, and I've gotten to the point now where I spend a good chunk of every year here in Puerto Rico. I think it's the perfect balance. I get the tropical beach lifestyle here, and then I get the mountains in. But it seems like every time I go to Puerto Rico for a while or somewhere else, and then I come back to Asheville, there are all these new things that
right.
have mm-hmm. opened. And I do hear people grumbling and complaining a little bit about overdevelopment. What's your perspective on that?
Well, it seems like with all of the national publicity and all of the attention on Asheville and putting in the spotlight, that everyone has rushed to build a hotel. I think there are 7, maybe more, hotels under construction in and around Asheville.
Hmm.
So that's great that they think that all these tourists are coming and that there's growth there, but, you know, there's a need for affordable housing, there's a need for parking, there's a need for a lot of things, and I feel like there's kind of a tipping point where everybody rushes to all do the same thing, which at the moment seems to be hotels.
Yeah, no kidding. And of course, we have all of these performers, not just, you know, your typical musicians, but you have street performers. For example, you know, you promote here the Man in White Living statue. Did you get to go around and interview a lot of these street performers and find out what their story is?
I did, and I in particular, I'm really fascinated with Abby the Spoon Lady. I think that she is remarkably talented. remarkably unique because she's one of the only people in the country who knows how to play the spoons, and she is fantastic on the spoons. So her story is in the book. The Man in White, you know, I think part of Asheville's spirit is a lot of people come here and find a creative way to stay afloat here. And he was someone that, you know, had been a carpenter. He had his own crew. They were building houses. The economy tanked, and he found himself without a crew and was having to sell his tools to pay his bills. And he went into downtown Asheville, and he saw people making money as buskers, and he pulled out his guitar, and he started busking. And then he saw the Silver Drummer Girl. She's another living statue in Asheville. She usually comes out for big events. She's dressed in silver from head to toe with a drum, and she is in a frozen pose, so she looks statuesque. And when someone drops money in her bucket, she comes to life, she plays a beat on her drum, and then she goes back in the frozen pose. And so he took his inspiration from that. He is the Man in White. He dresses all in white. When you put money in his bucket, he plays the guitar.
Okay, we're coming up on a break here, and when we return from that, it'll be our last segment of this hour. But I want to go ahead and reiterate to everybody now, if you go to MarlaMilling.com, you can read the first chapter of this new book, Only in Asheville, An Eclectic History, for free. You can also find it at the Amazon page. All that's linked up for you at SpeakingOfStrange.com. She also has a big event coming up, kind of a launch party, on Thursday, June 18th. And we'll talk to her more about that, as well as we'll ask her to be psychic and see if she can predict what Asheville might look like in 10 or 20 years. Tonight's program is brought to you by Wright's Coin Shop. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange.
Guitar cases, long faces, a warm embrace, and Sarah's tears. The freeway hums and sadness comes, then LAX just disappears. Airplane jail, some ginger ale, a magazine or two. Landing gear and airport beer, and I'm on my way to you. Rolling up through 74 through the French Broad River corridor, I see old black mountains holding court, and I know the trip is getting short. And then there you are, so divine, the crown on Queen Caroline, the Asheville city of skyline. Whoa, old buds, bear hugs, settle in, fix some strings. Blue Ridge trees, a Pisgah breeze. Hungry and Jacob sings. Microphones, a banjo drones, a banner head across my knee. Baker's Mark, getting dark, feels mighty fine to find the beat. Rolling up Route 74 through the French Broad River corridor, I see old black mountains holding court, and I know the trip is getting short. And then there you are, so divine.
Welcome back to Speaking of Strange in the final minutes of hour number two. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren. Coming up next hour, well, we call it the Dark 30 Hour. And that's when we talk about some of the more outrageous and controversial stuff, not for the kiddies, not for the easily offended, often more sordid and seedy news stories. That's why we air it late at night, so you can determine for yourself whether or not you want to stick around for that. Right now, I'm wrapping up a conversation with the author of the brand new book coming out this coming week. It's called Only in Asheville, An Eclectic History. Her name is Marla Hardy Milling. Her website is MarlaMilling.com. We'll have that linked up for you at SpeakingOfStrange.com. Let me go ahead and ask you right now, Marla, to tell all of our listeners how they can learn more about you and your book and anything else that you want to promote and make sure they have the opportunity to participate in.
They can come to my website, marlamilling.com, and I will have a lot of information on there, including the first chapter that they can read for free. And I will also be updating with events and times and other tidbits related to the book.
All right. That's marlamilling.com. And tell us again about your event at the Hop.
It'll be a book launch party on June the 18th from 6:30 to 8:30.
All right. That's 6:30 to 8:30. That's free for anybody. And I understand there will even be some free ice cream given out. Is that right?
There will be. Buy a book, and I will buy your ice cream. I mean, can it be more fun than that?
No, that's as good as it gets right there. Free ice cream, book launch. I'm taking notes on that one, Marla. I'm going to steal that idea from you. All right, fantastic. So let me ask you this, Marla. I know you're not a psychic, but let's just say that, you know, you're a visionary. You know Asheville. You've seen the patterns. If you had to use your imagination and give us an idea of what Asheville might look like in 10 or 20 years, what do you envision?
It's ironic that you say that because my final chapter in the book is called Grab a Crystal Ball. And I asked some of the people that I interviewed that very question. So a lot of their responses frame what I'm about to say. I think that with New Belgium Brewing Company coming into the River Arts District of Asheville, that's a huge thing that's going to dramatically change that segment, that River Arts District that has a lot of artist studios, working studios. I think that area is going to explode. West Asheville, which has its own unique, funky flavor, seems a bit separate from Asheville at this point. It's just a little bit down the road from downtown. But when you get New Belgium in there and the River Arts District exploding, that's going to provide a corridor between Asheville and downtown Asheville and West Asheville. So I think that's going to be one of the biggest things that's going to happen in the next 20 years is that Asheville and West Asheville and the River Arts District are all going to just get bigger and morph together. And hopefully the growth will be responsible and there won't be a lot of chain stores replacing the independent stores. You know, I guess my prediction is more of a wish. A wish that 20 years from now, Asheville will still be as unique and creative and eclectic as it is today.
Well, you know, as a guy who also grew up in Asheville, you know, seeing what has happened downtown has been surprising. Seeing what has happened in West Asheville has been shocking.
It's
like there was nothing of repute, really, in West Asheville when I was growing up, and now it is truly just a thriving, you know, wonderful artistic place with all these, you know, I'll say sort of, you know, culturally rich establishments. I mean, the last time I was there, I was drinking, you know, cider that was brewed right there
right
on the side at one place, for example. So, well, the clock has got us, but Marla, let me just once again congratulate you on writing such a fine book. Asheville really needed this perspective that you have given us, and you've captured and documented this very important era when Asheville's transforming into something new and wonderful. And so I wish you nothing but the best, and I want to thank you for including me and the work that I and my friends and associates do in this book. So I know it's going to be a huge hit, and we'll do everything we can to put a copy in people's hands. So thank you so much for writing the book, and thank you for being on Speaking of Strange.
Thank you, Joshua. I really appreciate the opportunity to be on your show, and I'm so grateful to have your quotes in my book because they truly are my favorite ones. They really are. You know, the strange connection to the Bermuda Triangle, I had never heard that before. I love that quote.
Well, there you are, my friends. You heard it right here on the airwaves. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we are going to dig into, yes, the Dark 30 Hour. In the meantime, be sure to go to speakingofstrange.com for more. I'm Joshua P. Warren. The show continues right after this.